Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I am Zach Moore, and this week I'm joined by Matt Latham. What's up, Matt?
I'm good, thank you very much. Thank you for having me again after my first appearance, so I'm glad to be back.
Yes. So Matt, you know, why don't you speak a few minutes about, or, you know, however long or brief you choose, on you've come a long way watching Smallville since the last time you've been on the show, huh?
I have, yes. I can't remember when it was we recorded Zero, but I'm sure I was I in season 4 at the time, or was it season? I can't remember when, but I'm now reaching the end of season 10. I think I actually watched about 3 or 4 episodes of season 10 this morning, and it was quite a, and I watched the episode we was talking about before then, so it was quite of a culture shock to jump from season 2 to season 10, but I've just finished Kent.
That's a great one, huh?
So, yeah, season 10's a lot better than I remember it being, I think. I think mainly because the first time I watched it, it was after I'd come back to it after giving it up halfway through season 8. And it was a case of, yeah, I'm just sitting down, I'm going to watch it. I just need to see how they end it now and get it over and done with. But looking back, when I've been watching it all the way through, I can kind of appreciate it without that feeling of just getting it over and done with, if that makes sense.
So, yeah, but I mean, there's so much anticipation and expectation and, you know, back at the day, in the day, so it'll be interesting when I get there to the end after having just relived the whole series, so.
Yes. Yeah, into what, 2020 or something, is it?
Yeah, I haven't quite done the math. It depends on how long I want to take these hiatuses between seasons, yeah. Although it does be good, to be honest, because I love Smallville, but I do have other things I do in my life, so it's nice to get a breather every now and then.
But no, I have enjoyed it, and I watched season 9 for the first time, because season 9 was the only season I hadn't watched, and I think it lived up to the hype, because I know that on Twitter you were saying, no, it's actually really, really good, and mm-hmm. I was quite surprised at how much I enjoyed season 9. So
I'm glad it lived up to the hype. I know I had been, like, as you said, I've been hyping it up a lot. So talking about jumping all around the Smallville timeline, this week's episode is Redux, which is just a very interesting case in Smallville history. If people recall, season 1 is only 21 episodes, and it ends at Tempest. And season 2 is 23 episodes. And Redux is why that's a thing. Because Redux was actually filmed after Tempest, before the cast and crew went on the summer hiatus. And what happened was they were kind of running behind, and they couldn't have 22 episodes out by the time, you know, the WB was wrapping up season 1. So, I mean, they had it budgeted. They had, you know, it on the schedule. It was just going to come out late. So they said, you know what? Which I don't know why they didn't just say, okay, Smallville, your finale can be a week later than everybody else. But what they did was they decided, okay, we're going to have the season finale, we're going to get that out, and then we're going to have this extra episode that we'll film and air next season. And that became Redux. And that's such an odd thing to me, because there's a lot of, I mean, every now and then on shows you get things filmed out of production order, but it's usually all in the same season. Mm-hmm. But think about this, the cast and crew. They just did this amazing episode, high budget, high stakes, cliffhangers, all this stuff going on. And then, you know, the next day, you know, they wrap production, you know, 6 or 7 day shoots. The next day they have to film this just random episode. And I definitely think the seams show, and we'll talk about it as we talk through the episode here, but once you go into it knowing that this was, you know, filmed during season 1 and they didn't know what was going to happen in season 2, because they hadn't sat down and, like, broke the season and figured out, you know, the story beats and the arcs and all that stuff. You see, like, oh, yeah, there's some serious post-production work trying to duct tape this thing together.
Yeah, definitely. What I noticed, I think at the time they probably wouldn't have broken a lot of the major story beats for season 2. Mm-hmm. They probably would have done that during hiatus when the cast had gone. So, but they might have had a rough idea of what they kind of wanted to do in season 2. And you can kind of see bits of the brainstorming sessions that they might have rushed in the episode. I can remember an interview, I think it was either Miller or Gough, I can't remember which one it was, and it was in a magazine I was reading just before season 2 started airing in the UK. And the thing that they said was that the theme for season 1 was asking the question of who am I, and season two was What Am I? And I think they must have had that in their heads at this point, because there's a bit of that in this episode, but doesn't seem very fleshed out. So there's a key point in the episode as well, which places it in season two. But you can kind of see that brainstorm, that like kind of rough idea in this episode, which makes it feel slightly out of place. But you can tell it was meant to be season two, if that makes sense.
Yeah, they definitely, as you said, they had some idea of what they wanted to do, because, as we'll get to, that there is one subplot that continues on through the season that they establish here. So it's not just some random episode that you could take out and it wouldn't matter, because there are things, there are seeds planted here for plots they pick up, you know, in later episodes. This episode, like, thinking about it, I think if they had to show, like, if they had to pick an ideal place in the season to put it, to air it, because being a big Star Trek fan, especially the original series, I'm all about, like, oh, episodes are out of order. What order could these actually be in? It makes sense. Because they did this a lot on, you know, in the original series of Star Trek, all three seasons, really. But if I was thinking about where they could air this, because it aired sixth in season two. The way I see it, they should have aired it third. Because that's, well, should have is... I don't know about should have. There's a reason they kind of hid this later on in the season, you know. But if you air it third, it's after Heat and before Duplicity, right?
Yep.
Whitney is still Blonda's boyfriend, I guess. Pete does not know Clark's secret.
Mm-hmm.
Martha does not work for Lionel.
Mm-hmm.
Clark has not just gone on his red kryptonite rampage. So there's no like awkwardness left over from people. So you look at all those factors and it's like, okay, if you had to slot this into season two, because, you know, beginning of season two, there's still, like, Heat, for example. We talk about Heat. Heat feels like just another season one episode, just, but good. Not in a bad way or anything. But it feels like, okay, this is just another episode and whatever. And this is the same way. Because once you get into Duplicity and Red and all these, you know, you get all these plot lines coming up. Nocturne with Martha working for Lionel. All that stuff, it puts a watermark on when things should be. So
yep.
I get why they didn't do it, because you really want this to be your... your third episode of season two, you know?
Yeah, definitely. But if you had this third, then it probably would have killed a bit of momentum, I think.
Yeah, it's like, well, I'm not gonna come back and watch next week. I don't care who finds the spaceship.
I've given three weeks of this stuff. No.
the stretch run of episodes of the end of season one and beginning of season two, it's excellent. I mean, that, like, I cannot think of like a better, and we'll see as the podcast continues, I cannot think of a better five episode run in the show between Tempest, Vortex, Heat, Duplicity, and Red. That's a strong run right there. I'd hate to mess it up with this. Well, that's some of the background on Redux. Let's go ahead and jump into it. Redux.
Clark, where have you been? I just left you like six messages.
Sorry, it's been a very weird day.
Well, it's about to get weirder. Take a look at this. Florida, 12 years ago, Piper High School. Three students died of the same mysterious Uber progeria.
All within a 48-hour period. Let me guess, Chrissy was involved.
Try Missy.
Class of 90, Missy Parker. Different name, same face.
Yeah, it gets better.
Lakewood High, class of 81. There she is again.
You're not going to believe this, Clark, but I matched Chrissy to triple progeria cases going all the way back to Hammond School for Girls, class of 1921.
It's like she's feeding off their youth to stay eternally young.
Takes the Peter Pan complex to a whole new level.
Troy was killed almost 2 days ago. Russell was killed yesterday. Chrissy's gonna need another victim.
I'll call the police. Clark?
Redux aired on October 29th, 2002. It was written by Russell Friend and Garrett Lerner and directed by Chris Long. Now, just right off the top, the Smallville, the official companion season two by Paul Simpson, available wherever books are sold, has this to say about Chris Long. Greg Beeman, director-producer of Smallville, had this quote to say. He said, "Chris Long had a great attitude about it and did his very best, but he got the short end of the stick. He did his director's cut on it. Then halfway through the summer, just before we started back to work on the second season, we looked at it and decided that we would throw a lot of visual effects at it." Sure. I don't know where those... I mean, I guess those came at the end, and That's a very obviously look. The people who even made Smallville know that this episode is one of the worst, if not we'll get into that at the end. But not the strongest episode. And, you know, just to get all our quotes out of the way off the top, Neil Bailey, who writes Smallville reviews for the Superman homepage, his review in this episode, his first line is, "This is probably one of the worst Smallville episodes that I have seen." All out that straight. So that's where we're coming from this, guys. But we're gonna have a fun conversation today, Matt. I think we are. So, so the episode starts off. They're in the pool, the Smallville pool at Smallville High School, which never looks the same, and we see it several times throughout the series. I guess they went to like a different pool, a different location every time. Clark is swim racing, which I guess unlike football, you're not gonna hurt anyone if you're really good at it. So. Yeah. It's cool for him to be competing in this athletic activity, huh?
Yeah, I mean, he's got to find something to, A, be competitive, and two, not hurt anyone when he accidentally runs into him. So, yeah. I mean, there's probably other sports that he could probably play. I mean, he could probably play darts or...
golf.
I don't know, chess.
Chess. So, what's he wearing? He's wearing his red swim trunks, which I thought was a cool reference to Superman. He's racing Pete to start, and this is like flag one of like, oh, this isn't season two, because, you know, Pete says something like, "Oh man, I slipped. If I hadn't done that, I would have beat you." And Clark was like, "Oh, I thought you were just slow." So, you know, it's vague enough where you could say that, oh, maybe he knows the secret and he's just playing along as they're in public. But clearly that's just, you know, a scene from season one with somebody not knowing Clark's secret. So while they're doing this, we meet Chrissy, a cheerleader who is making spirit signs with Lana because it is Spirit Week, and that's a very important thing. This episode, right?
Is that an actual thing in America, or is it just something Smallville created? Because I've never...
You would think it's just something silly they made up, right? Like the spring formal, something, yeah, I've never heard of before. But actually, no, this is correct. There is a Spirit Week. It's usually a homecoming week, in my experience, in high school. And you have like themed days at school and things like that. And I actually, you know, I had forgotten that this correlated to something I did in my high school, but we had a Spirit Week once, and we had a superhero day, right? So, of course, I came dressed as, you know, Clark Kent, Superman. My favorite costume, my default costume in any party or costume party or just any, like, convention I might go to or whatever and I want to dress up. So I'll post a picture of that. It's funny. And you can actually see my red kryptonite ring on in it. I'm still trying to track down that ring, folks. So I'll find that thing before the season finale because it shows up again then. But anyway, yes, to answer your question, Spirit Week is a thing. I thought that maybe you guys being across the pond were like, what is this? Spirit Week.
Yeah, I mean, quite a lot of American traditions. And the American school system is very different to the British school system. Immensely. And now, because I've worked in a secondary school for like 8 years as well, it's very weird. So you'll have stuff like, I think we finally get proms. We have proms and or like dances or parties at the end of school years for our leaver year, which is year 11, which is 16 year olds,
upperclassmen. Okay, yeah. Juniors, seniors. Yeah, that's when prom should be, not for freshmen at the spring formal. But at least I had, yeah. Hey, at least I had the conscience of mind to say, oh, it's not the prom, it's the spring formal. So
yeah.
Chrissy, so she's our I would say our featured guest star. I mean, I guess she is. She's the freak of the week this week, which we will learn. Now she's played by Maggie Lawson, who people probably best known for being in Psych.
Yes.
She was a main character of Psych. Did you recognize her from that?
Yeah, yeah. I was quite surprised to see her when she came in. So I was a big fan of Psych, actually. She played Jules. And she played Jules in it. And she was like the main love interest / female lead of that. And it was quite weird to see, oh, look, it's Jules. So that's happened a few times, actually, in throughout the run of Smallville. But it's not exactly Amy Adams-esque, but...
So, well, you know, when I first saw this, I was like, oh my god, is that Alicia Silverstone? Because doesn't she look like TV's Alicia Silverstone, at least in this episode?
She has that kind of look about her, actually.
Because they were going for like the Clueless thing, I bet, you know, when they were casting this part, because that's the vibe I got.
Yeah, definitely, but didn't go with that characterization. So the usual Clueless characterization is the kind of airheaded, stereotypical blonde, but spun so she's actually a nice person rather than your Mean Girls type thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, she's just more or less there.
Well, you know who else is there? Her boyfriend, Troy. And this is a very rare case of background character continuity in early Smallville, because Troy, if you recall, was a bully in the episode Shimmer. He was a bully, and he bullied the invisible guy and his sister in Shimmer. And, you know, this is exactly the kind of thing I'm always talking about on the show. Like, I don't know why they didn't do this more often. You know, we see the same actors all the time on Smallville and all these Canadian shows, the X-Files, right? They play different characters in the background. In fact, okay, so the actor's name is Jesse Hutch, and he comes back in season 4 to play a different part in one episode as, you know, a student. And it's like, why didn't we just have, like, these same people in the background all the time? And then, you know, when something happens, we, like, not that we, like, really care that much more because we saw that guy once before, but at least add some, like, sense of reality to the world. Like, oh, we've seen these people before.
Yes.
You know what
I'm
saying?
Definitely.
So, Chrissy gives Troy a good luck kiss because him and Clark are in the finals to see who's the fastest guy in the school. So I wonder if, I mean, Clark was just going to win. I mean, you see, typical Clark Kent would, like, throw the race to just avoid suspicion, but it looked like Clark was going all in to win anyway. As he's in his lane, Troy's in his lane, he starts to kind of feel a little sick, and then he just, like, collapses into the water, and people, like, start freaking out, like, oh my god, Troy, what's happening? So we see, you know, Clark submerge, and we get this really cool shot of him swimming over to Troy. And it looks, obviously, you know, there's zero gravity in water, so it looks like he's flying over to him, right? So that was a cool moment, I thought.
But wasn't he in the same lane to him? Wasn't he in the next lane to him? I mean, wouldn't it have been faster for him just to swim normally? I mean, you would have had, like...
Man, you ruined one of the cool things about this episode, Matt. Thanks a lot, man. Take it away. We don't have much.
But you just seem to be very unnecessarily swimming fast, if that makes sense. I mean, he's probably got, like... I mean, okay... light refracts, but you'll still be able to see someone underwater, and someone must have seen him underwater.
All right, that's true. All right, well, so much for that being cool. Moving on.
Sorry, Zach.
Oh gosh. So Troy. Well, they're being clever, I guess, right? Because we see Clark get him out of the water, and then he's like obscured by other people standing there, and then we turn him. This is like classic genre television moment, right? We turn the guy over, and he's old. Da, da, da. And I guess he's dead too. I mean, just because he's old doesn't mean he's dead, but it's just they imply that he's dead. So that is a +1 to the Smallville High School student death count. So we're gonna rack those up. This episode is the one I was thinking of. I was like, oh man, I gotta keep tallies on this. People are dying left and right. All kinds of students are being disintegrated or whatever. There was only one student death in season 1. All right, but we're gonna make up for that here. So that's +1 for this episode. So, you know, somebody save me, credits. We come back. We're at the Kent farm, and we're doing classic season 1 Kent family. They're worried about the finances. Jonathan's doing the books, and he's like, oh, I don't know how we're going to pay for the feed bill this month. It's like, why are they always on the brink of bankruptcy? I do not understand, especially having Clark around to do these chores, right?
Yeah, it's just something that's never really fully made sense, I think. I don't know if it's ever fully resolves itself or... But, yeah, it's just one of those things that Jonathan always seems to moan about or comment about, and then it just never seems to happen.
They want to show the juxtaposition between Lex's world and Clark's world, and I get that, and I like that. And, you know, I think we can all relate to that in various ways, in our own ways. But you're right, it's never really addressed how they got into such dire straits or how they get out of it. It does kind of ground Smallville to at least have it discussed, you know, like, hey, we have bills to pay and we operate a farm here, you know, we're not just having a good time all day long. But this is another red flag of like, this is season 1, this is not season 2, because, you know, they're talking about the finances, the Kents are, and then we have a classic moment of ADR where we see Clark like in the refrigerator, and we hear Martha go, my money from Lionel isn't enough, so it's like, that was added.
I actually wrote that down in my notes as well. It's very, very easy to see that it's just added.
Nice try, Smallville. Yeah. Nice try, show. You're not going to fool us that easily.
Yeah.
Basically, what they've come to is Martha wants to call her dad, and this is news to Clark, because he's like, why is it nobody ever talks about Grandpa? And Jonathan's like, it's complicated, son, or whatever, and as everything is with him. So that is going to be one of our plots for this episode is Martha getting back in contact with her dad. So we and you know, that's interesting for the Kents, because traditionally the Kents are always older in every other interpretation of the Superman mythos. So, you know, their parents are a non-factor. Their parents are obviously deceased at this point, because usually they're the age of, you know, what their parents would be here. Yeah. So that's a whole nother wrinkle to Superman we've never really talked about or seen before. So another something that's unique to Smallville. So we go to the Talon, and Lana is going through stuff. Because she's cleaning out the talent again, another flag that it's season one, because she's still like going through stuff, you know. Maybe I'm just like reading too much into these things. I mean, it's perfectly reasonable for her to just discover this episode, but I'm like, I'm just looking for stuff to complain about it being out of sequence now. But she's going through, you know, old areas of the talent that she hadn't gone through before, and she finds some photos of her mom and quotes some guy. I know, right? That's not good. And Clark's like, maybe they're just friends. It's like, clearly, well, it's very, you know, they're like at a picnic and they have their arms around each other and look very happy. Who knows who took? Maybe Nell herself took these pictures. Who knows?
Yeah. Whilst I'm not a professional photographer, you can clearly see that they're not taken on a camera that was in the 1985. That was like around when they were supposed to be taken in the 80s.
Right. They could have done some Polaroids or something. You know, yeah. That would have been a little more time. But you got to have the time date. I guess, you know, when you took it and think back, my friends, to a day where you used to go have pictures developed, they do, if you flip it over, they usually do have the date printed on the back. And that was what was very important for Lana to see, because that kind of sets, you know, this whole thing into motion. And because Clark's like, oh, maybe it's an old boyfriend. She's like, no, this is when my parents were still married. Which they kind of back off on at the end, which I felt was kind of a weak way to not to preserve the positive imagery of, or positive, you know, legacy of Lana's mom. But but you know, the bottom line here is they're talking about this, and Lex walks in as they're talking about this, right? And this scene is the epitome of, and this is, you know, you say Redux might have been better upon revisiting, and I think it might be worse, because not only does it have like this terrible A plot of the Freak of the Week, but they have so many little things which I feel like they do so wrong. Because like Clark and Lana are standing here talking about this, Lex walks into the Talon, he's like, oh hey, what's up guys, what are you guys talking about? Oh, they look like an attractive couple, like just to twist the knife into Lana's assumptions there. And then Clark's like, all right, well, we better get going to school. And Lex is like, oh well, I'm headed that way, you want to ride? It's like, what did you come here for, Lex? You didn't even order a coffee. You just came in, yeah, had a conversation, and you immediately... And that's something that happens in a lot of shows, right? It happens in a lot of shows, but it happens in Smallville so much. And it was like, oh, come on, guys, right? And, you know, we always talk about on the show, on the podcast, what day is it? What time of the day is it? These kids get up so early and accomplish so much before school every day.
Yeah.
Lana says, oh, I'm good. I have the first two periods off. It's like, what? No, you don't. Like... You're a sophomore. I had two periods off when I was a senior. Okay, it's a great idea, and I probably thought about this show. I'm like, man, if I had the first two periods off, I could get so much done, like on Smallville. There's no way that Lana had two off periods, but there's also no way that this 15-year-old girl is running a coffee shop. So suspension of disbelief, guys, right? But the irony here is that Lex is like, well, Clark, yeah, you're going to school. I'll give you a ride. And well, Clark's like, no, I was going to run. And they're like, I seriously doubt you can outrun my Porsche. And it's like, oh, ha, 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 ha. You know, it's funny, right? Because it's true. He thinks he's doing Clark a favor. In fact, he's just slowing him down. And Clark is totally late because of Lex, because if he would have run, he would have been there in no time.
Yeah. Which is quite strange, because Lex drives like a maniac, as we all know.
So they show up, and there's this guy that closes, like, the gate to the school right in front of him. Who is it but Principal Reynolds? I call him Special Principal 2. Because if you recall, you ever see the show Special Unit 2?
No, I haven't, no.
No, well, he was a main character on it. It was on UPN. I think it was like for like a season. It didn't last long. But he was a main character on that. And he's the second principal of Smallville. So that is a nickname and a hashtag that I always try to get people to adopt. And they never did. So maybe you guys will for me, but I will always refer to him as Special Principal too for that reason. Because Special Unit 2 came on around the same time that Smallville was on the air, so that's why I made that connection. But Principal Reynolds is played by Richard Gant. He's just, you know, a familiar face actor you've seen in a lot of things. He was in Rocky V as George Washington Duke. That might be his most known role. He was in Nutty Professor 2, which I do not recommend at all. As good as the first Nutty Professor with Eddie Murphy was, that is how bad the second one was. It is just not good. And he's been in a lot of things. He's been in Men of a Certain Age. He's been in General Hospital. I mean, this guy's been all over the place. He's been in Deadwood. So if you've watched any television over the last 20 years, you've seen this guy. I mean, he was in NYPD Blue. I mean, so he's got a good resume on him. So this was actually a good guest star to get. Obviously, mm-hmm. Principal Kwan, you know, was killed last season, so there was a vacancy for Principal. It's a smart idea, and, you know, I'm actually the one who's always saying, like, as much as we're complaining about how the way they address school is just stupid and doesn't make any sense,
mm-hmm.
I liked it when they did school stuff, because it just added, once again, a sense of authenticity. You know, I mean, let's, you know, Clark Kent is in high school, let's embrace that, and you can have some fun with that, right? Like, oh, he's always late to his classes. Okay, this has brought the attention of a principal, a overly invested principal, by the way, because Clark gets out, and he's like, whoa, I need to get in there. He's like, who are you? I'm Clark Kent. Oh, Clark Kent. Well, that explains why you're tardy, because I'm looking over your records, and it's like, these people do not exist, right? People that, like, memorize every record of every student, right?
There's no way that the principal or head teacher of a school can remember every single thing about every single student.
Right? It's a trope. It's like, oh, yes, so-and-so. Like, you have a new principal. He's overzealous about stuff. He's going through personnel files or whatever you call them in school, right?
Reynolds reminds me of... He's very similar to a character called Principal Snyder, who was played by Armin Shimerman in Buffy.
Oh, Quark.
Yeah, Quark. He was brought in, I think, after they killed off the first principal, when he was eaten by a bunch of hyena-possessed students.
Oh, as you do.
Yes, but they brought him in, and he was the opposite of the first principal, because the first principal was a guy called Flutie, who kind of took a chance on Buffy, but she had, like, a criminal record, until she burned down, before the show, she burned down the gym and stuff. And Snyder was there as a human antagonist for the main character on the school side of stuff. Mm-hmm. And
well, that's what they were going for here, clearly.
I mean, he was nowhere near as snivelly and as repulsively cool as Snyder, I think, because the character of Snyder is actually one of these annoying characters who's just really, you want to strangle, but when you rewatch it, he's a very, very good antagonist, because he's just got no redemptive qualities whatsoever. But they kind of bust that trope that you mentioned about the principal knowing about the main character or looking at the records of schools, because the character of Buffy actually had a criminal record, so that's probably why Snyder would have gone through her record. But
well, Reynolds is giving Clark such a hard time because he knows Lex Luthor, right? Because it's established that Lex knows Reynolds, and he was the headmaster at Excelsior when Lex was there. They exchange some words, and, you know, by the way, Lex is wearing these. I guess they're driving glasses, which I found funny. He wears them in a few episodes in season two, if I recall, and it's just funny to see him wear. I don't know why. It's funny because it's like you never. It was just this few episode stretch in season two where when Lex is driving around, he's got these sunglasses, driving glasses on, and no other time in the series. But, you know, him and Reynolds have some words, and they go about their business. But it's established that Reynolds does not like Lex. He doesn't like the Luthers, and he's pretty much transferring those feelings over to Clark, mm-hmm. Because a man is judged by the company of his friends. And to your point about, you know, the Buffy principal, Principal Quark, you know, that kind of character. You said he was like fun. You love to hate him. That kind of thing going on.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but he was there to add another complication to the main character, the high school life was a very key part of that show, which. Really, that Smallville does neglect, as you can see through the amount of episodes that Reynolds appears in later on.
Yeah, so let's talk about that for a second. So another quote from the Smallville official companion season two by Al Goff. Hey, he had this to say about Principal Reynolds. He said, "The idea was that we were going to use him, and then it just didn't work out. When you start breaking stories, you realize there's not a lot this guy could do. There wasn't much to play there, and the character can only give you so much. So we ended up dropping him. So they got all that trouble to establish this new principal, and they give him one episode. And then you get a cool character actor like Gant here, and it's like, why don't you, you know, give him another shot, at least one more appearance, and see what you could do with him, right?
Yeah, because there's a couple of things that he does, because he's like a key part of the episode. And there's a couple of stories that he does in this episode, which could have been used over the course of two or three different episodes in general.
Yeah, because he's popping up in like a lot of scenes. Like they were getting their money's worth out of him as a guest star.
Yeah.
Usually this kind of guy would be like in two, maybe three scenes. He touches almost every plot of this episode.
Yeah, I want to quickly throw you a new game to play whilst watching, while we recover this episode. So you've got What Day Is It? I'd like to introduce What the Hell Is the A-Plot? Because at the moment, because we've got the situation with Chrissy.
Mm-hmm.
And her boyfriend who suddenly died of old age, which we haven't covered in about 5 minutes. Then we've got...
That's true. No one has discussed this in a while, have they?
No. Then we've got the, the obvious B plot, which is the mysterious photograph that Lana finds. And then you've got the introduction of a new principal with connections to Lex. And as it's... It's a comment. I'm not sure.
Don't forget. Then we have our plot with Martha's dad.
Yes, as well. I mean, how long are we into the episode now? I should have made notes of how long into the duration we're in. But there just seems to be all. It just seems to still be opening.
Yeah, scene after scene. Yeah. I had one comment in my notes here about this episode. It's just these scenes are not long enough. Like, there's lots of scenes you could really like. Scenes with Reynolds and Lex, Reynolds and Clark, Martha and her dad, Martha's dad and Jonathan, Clark and Martha's dad, right? All these scenes could have been twice as long, but they have to be so short because they have all these random plots. So that's a great point. I mean, seriously, this episode has four plots.
And I'm not sure what the A-plot's supposed to be. It's supposed to be, we can see at the moment that it should be the Freak of the Week one, which is the Chrissy. But that's been pushed back. And we've had all these character subplots come in and seem to be vying for time. And it's very much overloading the episode already.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, revisiting this episode, it was like, it's not only that you had, like, this terrible Freak of the Week plot, which it is, but you had, like, no structure that makes any sense, and you just have all these tropes going around. So it kind of fails on almost every level, unfortunately. But yeah, to your point about Reynolds being so involved, the next scene we see is him, and he's going to talk to Chrissy about, oh, I see you haven't sent your transfer papers in. We're going to have those, so I'm going to call your parents and get those in. She's like, oh, yeah, sure, no problem. So if he wasn't such an overzealous, again, being an overzealous principal, that she would just kind of skirt it on by unnoticed, as she had been doing for a long time, apparently. But hey, we're a long way off from that revelation, because, we like you said, we still got three other plots to get through. So, you know, Clark's in the torch. He's kind of complaining about Principal Reynolds to Chloe and Pete. And well, once again, I like moments like this because it's like Clark's frustrated. This is what you do in high school. You're frustrated about a teacher. You complain to your friends.
Yeah, yeah.
You think you're being singled out. I mean, I've felt that before by certain teachers and stuff. But and their reaction to it is funny because Pete and Chloe are both like, oh, so finally a teacher doesn't like you. It reminded me of, did you ever watch The Office, the American version of The Office?
Yes.
Okay, you know when they bring in Idris Elba to replace Michael Scott?
Yes.
And like he doesn't like Jim? I thought that was so funny. Because there's no really reason to not like him, but
yeah.
It's just refreshing to see because everybody loves Jim, you know, and he's just not having it, right?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. It's because again, that kind of sees the potential you've got in the character of Reynolds itself, in that you've got someone who's not instantly swayed by the likability of Clark. It does establish an interesting dynamic that the show should be exploring.
Mm-hmm, exactly. But then we find out here that he was on the fast track. Reynolds was like on the fast track. He had been on lots of schools around, you know, Europe or whatever. But after he was let go from Excelsior, Lex's old school, his career just kind of tanked, and now he finds himself in Smallville High School. So that's a subplot. God, once again, like you were saying, just another subplot we'll address, you know, more information, you know, to unravel. Don't forget about our other plots going on here. So Clark and Lana are at the Talent again, setting up for this Spirit Week. It is odd they're having Spirit Week like at the Talent and not just like at Smallville High School and say the gym. But whatever, you know, we get to see the important thing here is that is we get to see the Talon's theater, because the Talon's a lot bigger than we've been led to believe so far. So Clark and Lana walk around, and let's not forget the Talon used to be or was connected to, or actually, yes, the Talon itself used to be a movie theater. So we actually get to see that theater here. And if I recall correctly, this is only one of two times we ever see it. We see it again in Accelerate, I believe, at the end of season two. So that's cool to see. And Clark does have a mention that his grandparents retired to Coast City, which is a reference to Green Lantern City. Back in the day when Smallville would say stuff like Central City or Coast City, people would lose their minds. Cool Coast City reference. They mentioned Central City last season on Smallville, and I believe it was actually, Matt, on Zero, now that I think about it.
Yes, it was. Yes, absolutely. And I think because they mentioned Bloodhaven in the same sentence, I think.
Oh, yeah, okay. So you see, there's all these little Easter eggs. So never in their minds did they think they're gonna have Booster Gold on Smallville or something. Yes. Yeah, they're talking about these Easter eggs. You know, Clark and Lana are still trying to figure out, you know, what's going on. Well, Clark's talking about his family situation with his grandpa, and Lana's talking about her situation with, you know, the pictures. And Nell makes an appearance. So another sign this is season one.
Yeah.
Because Nell is there.
Yep, Sarah Jane Redmond's probably still got in a trailer. Says, oh, yes, she's still here.
So, you know, I guess this scene here would be a Bechdel test pass, because Lana and Nell are talking about her mom, you know. So something that's not a romantic situation with a guy. So
but then again they are talking about the guy in the photograph, so would that
you know, I did put a question mark by what do you think, Matt?
It's probably gonna be how you define the Bechdel test, isn't it? Because it's usually about someone that one of the female characters is either involved with or has romantic tension with. But then
see every scene between Chloe and Lana in season two and three about Clark.
Yes.
So I'm going to give this one a pass, just because I think Smallville needs passes while we get it. Because look, once Nell leaves, we're not going to have any passes, right? Nell and Lana have been responsible for most of our passes, so I'm going to give it a pass. But right, that's a good call about the guy in the picture. So she gives her some like really vague, lame non-answer. It's like, Lana, your mother loved your father and you more than anything, and she'd never do anything to hurt you. I'm like, give me an answer. Nell, you know? And then they cut to commercial there, which is like, that's an odd, like, you wait for some kind of like escalation of stakes, right? And then like, you know, some reveal or some kind, and then cut to commercial and leave you hanging when you come back. This is like, yeah. Okay, Lana, you believe me? And then cut. It's like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Of course, you know, that stuff doesn't matter as much when we watch them the way we watch them today, but I don't know.
Again, that the act outs, I think, in storytelling, particularly TV storytelling, the act out should be on the A plot. So it should be some kind of escalation over the mm-hmm. Chrissy.
Yeah, like she should have killed someone else or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. But no, it's, again, it's, what is the A plot?
Yep. No, that's a good game. We'll have to start instituting that with what day it is. So next scene is Martha at the farm, and we meet her dad. He is played by George Coe, who is a pretty famous character actor. He was in Kramer versus Kramer. I probably know him best from an episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation, First Contact. He was the president of a planet the Federation goes to, the Enterprise goes to have first contact with, and they pretty much decide, you know what, this alien contact thing is not for us. It's actually one of the better episodes of Next Generation.
Is that the one where you kind of see it from their perspective, and they suddenly find an injured? Is it Picard or?
It's Riker, but yes, Riker. We see the first like third of the episode is like from the alien's perspective, so that's always interesting bit of storytelling when they shake it up that way. And yeah, but he's been in like the West Wing, and he's been in just all kinds of shows, just a working actor.
So I wonder if they just found out, because it's the end of the season, they still have all this money in the pot, and like, okay, so...
Well, yeah, they're getting all these established guest stars, aren't they?
Yeah, so we'll get Richard Gant in, we'll get this guy in, like, I don't know, I'm fully expecting, I don't know, like Roger R. Cross to suddenly turn up as well or something at some point, because they just spend all the money. But
It was funny. I was talking to Craig Byrne from Krypton Site, which, by the way, if anyone hasn't checked out Krypton Site or K-Site TV, please check it out. It's the number one source for everything Smallville on the internet, and they talk about all the recent CW shows as well. But anyway, I was talking to him about this, and I was like, why didn't they just film Vortex next after Tempest, right? It makes so much more sense. Because you have the guest actors, you have like the set pieces, you have everything, like the costumes, everything, you know. And then it would make more sense chronologically just watching it. Because there are certain things about Vortex, you're like Chloe, for example. Like, yeah, Chloe looks like straight out of like mid-season 2 Chloe. She doesn't look like right after the dance Chloe, but little things like that. But as I understood it, like the budget was almost at nothing because they had spent so much money on Tempest with all the big special effects moments and all that. So that was pretty, that's the best thing we could come up with, because clearly they could have written Vortex right after Tempest, and probably would have been easier for them to do then. But instead they wrote this. So I don't know about the budget thing. That's a good point about the guest stars. Now, you think both of these characters, right, might, okay, these are recognizable faces, these are plots that have a lot of potential, that are and it's almost promised that more will come from them as the series progresses. No,
yeah,
neither of these plots.
Yeah, there's something at the very end of the episode that I'll point out as well regarding that. But
exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, it's well, we'll, as the episode goes on, we'll probably talk about William a bit more. But yeah, I completely get what you're hinting at. So
yeah, no, for sure. And then, you know, it has been implied that, well, implied, has been said that Martha came from the world of Metropolis, and she's not just a farmer's wife, you know, as Martha Kent has traditionally been. She's a city girl who fell in love with a farm boy and moved to the small town of Smallville. So you can tell that her dad does not approve. And this is a nice little moment. Like, we're being pretty negative on this episode. I will say, when Martha and her dad first see each other, they kind of awkwardly hug, and they're not really sure how to greet each other, which I thought was said a lot without saying anything. You know, but these people, they don't express their feelings very much. They haven't seen each other in a while. It's a very weird family situation. So that was a nice little, just a little acting touch or writing touch. I'm not sure, directing touch, where it came from, but that was good. Mm-hmm. And then all this talk about this is not the life I chose for you, Martha, and stuff like that. Again, another flag. This is season one, not season two, because at this point, Martha has her job with Lionel. So yeah. She's back in the game with that, despite their attempts at ADR to act like they covered it. This would have been a great, if they just, once again, air it third, probably would have tanked the ratings, but air it third. And it makes sense chronologically in the story, because this would have been another maybe thing to kind of push her over the edge to get that job with Lionel. Yeah, you're right. I'm not reaching my full potential, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he could have logistically said that after what happens in the episode, he kind of pushes Martha to look for something or, start looking. I can't remember if actually that happens before Nocturne's when she works for Lionel, isn't it?
Well, in this very episode, Matt, she's cooking muffins, right? And yeah. Talking about, oh, I have a new client at down at the so-and-so store. And Clark's like, oh, that's great. And he's delivering stuff for his mom. And, you know, they're talking about, that's her thing. Because in season one, that was her thing, produce and baking and all that stuff, you know?
Yeah, self-employed, homemade stuff that she was making. So, I mean, and considering the amount of muffins that were made that you saw, and they seem to sell quite well. Mm-hmm. Again, the question of the finance issue crops up.
Yeah, because this is a second job, right? Yeah. Additional income, right?
And it's, I mean, yeah, and again, playing what day is it? The kids are up early, he comes downstairs, and Martha looks like she spent hours cooking those muffins. Then what is she then going to, then after those muffins are done, going to go hop on a commute to Metropolis, or?
Oh yeah, if you look at it like that, you're right. Again, another season one flag. Yeah, but you know, it is a farm, so I buy that Jonathan and Martha get up early. But yes, excellent point about, all right, now that I've sold all these muffins, I'm off to start my job with Lionel. So we have three incomes coming in now. We have Jonathan in the farm with Clark's help. We have Martha and all her cooking, and then we have Martha working for Lionel, and it's still not enough. What kind of debt, what kind of bad real estate decisions did you get sucked into, Jonathan? This farm you've inherited, why is there any money to be paid? What is going on here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that the rent or mortgage or whatever was paid, it should have been paid off by now. I mean, either that, or did Jonathan's dad just have a really crap finance deal on
that? I guess so. A line that Martha's dad here has to her, he says, "And here you are 20 years later going behind your husband's back asking me for money." That is such a burn. Because he's so right. He's like, this is exactly what I said would happen. And here he is. And he's not really being a jerk about it. He's just like, look, I told you this is going to happen. And here we are.
Yeah. So. Unless all those trucks that get destroyed just really do.
That's what does it.
Yeah.
But then Clark shows up unexpectedly because Martha says, oh, Clark, I thought you were at the Talon or whatever. He's like, oh, I got done early. And he meets his grandpa. And obviously Martha didn't really want Clark to meet him. And it's kind of just awkward because Clark's all like, oh, why don't you stay for dinner or stay for whatever? And he's like, nope, I'm sorry, but I have to go. And he leaves. And you're like, what is up with this? This is just weird. But he obviously doesn't want to stick around and see Jonathan. So, but he's gonna give her a cashier's check, and that's that. But you can tell Clark's kind of sad about the situation. And then we get this really odd cut to, like, the Kents again. Like, Jonathan's back from wherever he was and in the middle of chores, and they're talking about it. And it really feels like there should have, with all these subplots, as we've mentioned, they're going on in this episode, really feels like there should have been, like, cut away to another plot and then cut back to the Kents, right? Why do you don't cut to the same characters later in the day when you have so, I mean, this is television. Like, it's structure. You just, you know, scene to scene to plot. I mean, the scene is fine, but it just feels oddly placed, right, Matt?
Yeah, because I think, again, you've got a passage of time that doesn't, I don't know, just doesn't seem to work properly. And as you said, there's, what, three other things going on that they could easily have cut to.
Well, you can tell they, I mean, I don't know if they did any reshoots, per se. I mean, they mentioned adding special effects, but they seriously restructure some things in editing, clearly. But it's revealed here in this conversation that Clark's like, okay, what is so bad about, you know, you guys and my grandpa? And Jonathan says that when he asked William, it's his name, right? Is it William?
Yes.
William Clark, you know, for Martha's hand in marriage, he said no. William said no, and then tried to throw him out, and then Jonathan hit him, which is classic Jonathan Kent temper, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's ridiculous, but it's completely in character for what we know of Jonathan. So it's like, okay, I actually completely buy that. Usually if you had some, like, dark secret from a character's past, you'd be like, that's no way he would do that. Come on. But, you know, Jonathan did it, and it's like, yeah, I can see that. And they haven't talked since in, like, 20 years. So I guess William did not walk Martha down the aisle at her wedding, huh?
There's a nice little line as well, I think, beforehand where he goes, come on, it can't be worse than what's in the storm cellar. And like Martha and Jonathan just look at each other and I'm like, what, it is worse than Storm Cellar, what?
He's like, is it? What?
Is it really? Is it? I mean, like, I don't know, falling out with your father-in-law, alien ship with a super-powered baby inside.
Well, it's all relative, you know. So then we get to, I guess, we get back to what should be our A-plot. Or no, it's our B-plot. Or who knows? But we're at the Talon again, and Alana has called Lex to find out who her mom's friend is. And then Lex, of course, in typical Luther fashion, goes off about, well, you know, the story of Pandora. It's like, okay, that's unnecessary, Lex.
There's like an unused tally board category there in Luther history lessons.
Yeah, because I think you actually tweeted us that, and I'm like, yeah, maybe I should have. But it's like, oh, man, there's so much.
actually, that might be an interesting thing, actually, if there's perhaps moments that aren't tally categories but should be or unused tally categories, if anyone wants to put that hashtag unused Smallville tally categories or something.
Well, this scene, they didn't even really need this scene, honestly. In an episode that's so jam-packed with too much going on and where other scenes need to be longer, you could have just had Lana tell Clark later, like, yeah, I talked to Lex and he got me this folder. And he told me about Pandora's box. I don't know. You could have rolled it into another scene because we actually have another scene later on with Clark and Lana. And it's like, hey, Lex got me this, but I haven't opened it yet. Right? That's all you needed. So I'm like, thinking as an editor, like, okay, this is the first scene to go because it's extraneous. We don't need it. But I guess we had, like, as you said, we had to get our Greek mythology quota in for the episode. So then now we go back to what should be our A plot. And Chloe at the Torch, her contact at the Emmy office, Smallville's only goth, by the way.
Which, to be fair, I do quite like that line. It's quite, I don't know why. I mean, it's probably looking for good stuff in it, but I do quite like the imagery and the dialogue. But which I hope we meet that character. No, we don't.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, out of all of the contacts she name drops over the years, I don't think we meet a one of them.
No.
So, but basically, this autopsy report she got from Troy's autopsy says that his pituitary gland was out of control, and the hormone that controls the aging process is in it. So there's your pseudoscience for the episode, folks. Because his pituitary gland got whatever, he aged too quickly, and he died. And Clark's like, well, that doesn't make any sense. That wouldn't happen instantaneously. And then they start theorizing. But Chloe had mentioned that Principal Reynolds was going to come by for an interview. And so he kind of walks in while they're talking here. And you know, Reynolds says, actually, I was looking for you, Mr. Kent. Would you care to join me in my office? And Clark goes in his office, and he's like, man, I've never been in the principal's office before. And he does call Clark out on some things, which I like the continuity here. He's like, well, I think you're a slacker, Kent. You quit the football team before playing one game. I was like, yeah, continuity. Yep. And you have chronic tardiness, and you have zero extracurriculars. And I was about to say, like, I was all ready to say, hey, what about the Torch? And Clark says, oh, I write for the Torch. And apparently all he does is, like, transcribe the cafeteria menu, which is pretty funny, right?
I can't remember if I mentioned this, but I used to... At the school I work at, I used to run an after-school session, which was the school newspaper. So, yeah, so whenever anyone starts talking about the Torch and how much stuff on there, no way is that going off daily.
You and I have talked about this. I don't think we have, because I was on the high school newspaper, mainly because of Smallville, but, you know, yeah. I was like, yeah, man, we could be like Clark and write for the school paper. But, yeah, I mean, we had a staff of, like, 7 people. And a teacher who, like, monitored everything, and mm-hmm. It came out every 6 weeks. It's like, whenever she says, like, you can check it out on page 1 of today's Torch, I'm like, that is such BS.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and there's no way that one 15-year-old girl has got the attention span to run that. I mean, no one, not even someone as dedicated and one-track mind. But, again, diverging, why are they putting the menus in the Torch? Well, don't they just hang them up on the cafeteria? I mean, again, the school I work at, we have a screen, which is a web page, which links to some, and all I have to do once every 3 months, update what food is on what day.
Hey, man, this is a small town in 2002. They don't have that kind of technology yet. Give them a break.
Okay, well, yeah.
So Reynolds here. He calls Clark to task and wants him. It's like, I want you to write a 5-page essay about where you're going to be 5 years from now. And it's like, the principals, can they give you assignments like that? Like,
yeah.
I guess. Clark's like, why are you doing this to me? And he's like, well, how do you know Lex Luthor? He's like, well, he's my friend. And, you know, obviously, once again, it's implied that, you know, Reynolds has some bad history with the Luthers.
Actually, when you're saying, where do you see yourself in 5 years' time? Now, the air date of Redux is the 29th.
Yes.
have you looked into this as well? Or?
No. Go on. I thought the same thing, but please go ahead.
Yeah, I think it was like the 29th. So I had a quick look, and an episode aired not exactly 5 years' time, but on October 25th, 2007. What episode do you think aired? What do you know?
Well, I thought about it. I didn't look it up. I was going to say, like, I know 5 years from now in season 7, he's not in college and he's not studying journalism, as he says at the end of the episode. Gosh, okay, let me think. So that must be early season 7, which I don't know, like, the back of my hand, like, do these earlier seasons. But I'm going to guess, is it Cure?
You're close. It's Action.
It's
the episode after Cure.
All right, hey, not bad off the top of my head though.
No. It's the one with the Warrior Angel filming.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Clark's doing in 5 years' time, just moping about on his mom's farm, on his parents' farm,
living at home.
Yep. Where is spoilers?
Oh, yeah, I know, right? Yeah, that's a pretty harmless spoiler, guys. Yeah. But, yeah, no, I thought the same thing. Like, yeah, where are you in 5 years, right? But then, you know, Clark's at the Talon sometimes I criticize, like, why are these people always in these public locations? But Clark is kind of avoiding his home life right now because things are kind of awkward with his parents because they disagree about Martha's dad. So he's there writing his essay. And it's, you know, Hollywood shorthand for he's having trouble writing. He has like a stack of crumpled papers on his desk. Lex just comes into the Talon. Like maybe he just pops in like once an hour just to see if he's going to run into anyone he knows. I mean, like, you know, hoping to run into Clark or Lana or whoever. And he kind of sees that, oh, where you are in 5 years? Let me guess, Reynolds gave you that assignment. So he says that Reynolds had given Lex the same assignment back in the day, and he said that he always respected Reynolds. He was tough but fair, and he liked him for that. So, you know, even though Reynolds doesn't like Lex has no ill will towards Reynolds. But then what else we get from this conversation is Lex pretty much gives Clark a little advice on how to deal with his family situation. He basically tells him, like, to force Jonathan and William into the same room and have him hash out the problems.
Which is actually not that bad advice, to be honest. What I quite liked about that scene, because I did quite like the scene, It's one of the few moments where you can actually see why Lex and Clark are actual friends, because there's no real secrets about it. They're actually being honest with each other. It's because it's quite rare. I mean, the last time I think those both perfectly honest was when Lex pretty much tells Clark in Vortex that he almost left his father to die, which was brutally honest. But yeah, it's quite nice to remember that they were friends at one point, and
they had conversations that didn't revolve around just caves and crystals.
Yes, exactly. And so sometimes where you sometimes you kind of buy the fact that when someone later on with the inevitable fallout, which okay isn't really a spoiler, which if you know your Superman lore,
Clark Kent and Lex Luthor become enemies. Yes, spoilers.
Oh, do they? Oh, damn it!
But you haven't watched the end of season 10 yet. I'm sorry to spoil that for you.
But it's you forget that there should be more moments. I think there should be like slightly more moments like that,
mm-hmm,
where
absolutely.
And it was quite nice to actually see it happen. So if there's anything from the episode to take from it, there's at least a moment you can say, well, there were. Getting advice, and well, Clark was getting advice from Lex, and
lots of little moments like that, definitely. Yeah, but like the can slice you mentioned before, calling this out, those are all good points. I don't think they salvaged the episode. Those are all good points, Matt.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, our Chrissy had talked to Clark a little bit as he's been sitting there, and it is kind of funny. She's like, "Hey, Clark, let's more Spirit Week stuff," and he's like, "Yeah, I got to work on this essay about the future." She's like, "Oh, who cares about that stuff?" And Clark's like, "Well, I like to think there's more life than high school." So that's a nice moment between them.
Yeah.
So Chrissy is established. She's around. And then, like, the lighting guy for the Spirit Week thing comes and gets her. There's a couple moments in this episode where Chrissy kind of notices, like, wrinkles on her eyes or her hand. And, like, something's happening. She's getting, you know, something's happening. I wonder what it is. The lighting guy, it's just her and the lighting guy on the stage, and you know where this is going, right? She starts kind of hitting on him. Apparently his name is Russell, which we find out, you know, spoilers after he dies. Spoilers for 2 minutes from now.
Oh, thanks, Zach.
Yeah, I know, right? Sorry, guys. Another spoiler. Another episode of Smallville ruined by me on the podcast. Yeah. But apparently this guy was, like, Troy's friend, and he's, like, shaken up about it, and she starts hitting on him and then, like, kisses him, and she says something like, "I'm doing this for Troy," and then I wrote down this quote. "I'm doing it for, quote, the ones who will live inside me forever," which is like, what are you talking about? Like, first of all, take that out of context. Yeah. It's very inappropriate. Second, she's not stealing their soul, is she? I thought she was just taking, like, their, you know, their youth. So it makes it sound like she's some kind of, like, interdimensional, like, witch. But we're not there yet. That's season four.
But then you've got what looks like Russell seems to age whilst kissing Chrissy, whereas
as opposed to what happened earlier,
Troy just, like, was it a quick peck and then, like, somehow managed to transfer it through airwaves. And after,
well, perhaps, you know, it because you didn't kiss him as long, it took a while for it to set in. I don't know. I'm sure you could, if we cared, we could justify it, but I don't care.
Yeah.
But so we have another plus one for Smallville High School student death. Like I said, they're racking up this week. So Russell's dead. And it looks very similar to the effect in Reaper when the people turn to ash. So I'm sure they just reuse that After Effects file for when they killed Russell there. So that plot is finally moving along halfway through the episode.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, and this is an appropriate time to cut to commercial, by the way. So at least this act break was better than the last one. So we come back, and Clark has engineered the meeting between Martha's dad, William, and Jonathan. It doesn't go well. You know, they immediately start, you know, in fact, but honestly, like, I think they get to this point a little too fast. Like, they should have at least had a little more pleasantries and a little more build up. They immediately start going, like, "You're as stubborn as you were 20 years ago." And it's like, can we have a little more calm? I feel like Clark, they're like, "Hey, listen, hear him out."
Yeah.
But they immediately start going in their negativity. And then Jonathan pretty much caps it off with, "Get off my land," which is a great line. Yeah. Right?
But I think as great as John Snyder is as Jonathan, the show makes no effort to mask that he's a very flawed individual in terms of his temper and everything. It's very oddly how the scene ends, in which Jonathan's like, "Don't worry, Clark, he's just not gonna bother, he's not gonna bother trying to make amends," when I don't know about you, but I always got the impression that Jonathan was the one that was on the offensive more than anything. I did think that Jonathan should have, I don't know, dialed back a bit. I mean, he's got his pride and his stubbornness in, but I mean, I think that if perhaps Jonathan from two seasons from now perhaps would have took a step back, or at least been convinced by Clark to hear him out.
Yeah, they could have delved into that stuff if they just let this plot breathe a little bit. You could have had another scene. You know, we never got another scene really between Martha and Jonathan, right? That would have been a good scene to have, to them hash stuff out, you know, and we just never got that. And, you know, I think some of this might be, we get another, like, revelation about why they never reconciled with her father at the end of the episode, which I feel like they should have, like, that should have been the crux of the whole thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, because a lot of the episode as well, you always get the impression that Martha just stood back and just let it happen. And I mean, and again, there's just something about that aspect of Jonathan and Martha's relationship that kind of rubs me up the wrong way, in that it feels like, yeah, okay, I'm taking your daughter, she's coming with me, and she kind of just accepts it. And I would have thought that perhaps would have been, I don't know, a bit more agency from Martha, which we don't really see at this point in the show yet. It's very similar to what happens between two male characters fighting over a female character, which the show will repeat later on for different reasons. And the female character isn't involved in the discussion, and we don't really see much of Martha's viewpoint in what happens. I mean, and I'm assuming that at that time, Martha didn't just suddenly say, oh, okay, then you punch my dad, let's move to Smallville. There must have been some
fallout from complex. That, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, and again, I think it's, again, season one, where they really misuse Martha. Season one flag, because they really, like, leave her out on the sidelines quite a lot in season one, and they don't really know what to do with her until, like, season two. If it was written after Nocturne, when she pretty much says, oh, I'm going to work with Lionel, and then you've got that tension between Jonathan and Martha starting to brew underneath because of the job with Lionel, there probably would have been a stronger sense of continuity to give Martha as a character a bit more confidence to...
Right, but you'd have to approach it differently, because they should never be in this situation.
Yeah, true, yes.
No, that's all true. See, this is rich stuff that, like, you know, character stuff, people stuff, you know, non-crazy sci-fi genre stuff that could add some richness to all the characters. And they just, I don't know, spoilers, but they never address this ever again. So it's just, like, such a missed opportunity, right?
I think if it was a season three episode, they probably would have found a way to do a story involving Martha's dad without having that Freak of the Week subplot, which is something I think they managed to get better at. Particularly in the end of season two.
I bet nobody thought we'd have this much insight into things to discuss in Redux. There's a lot, when you have four plots in one episode, there's a lot to discuss, people.
It's very badly done, but it's a very interesting episode of what they're trying to do. And I think the episode in general is very indicative of what Smallville does half the time, in that it's got very good ideas and very good ambition. It just misses the mark in execution at times. Mm-hmm. And this episode is kind of that problem all focused in at once, whereas you might have some episodes with some good points. This is just trying to force so much, and it just affects every element it's trying to balance.
Well, speaking of elements they're trying to balance, we go back to Smallville High School, and we get a little more momentum on our Chrissy plot. Chloe tells Clark about Russell dying, and he's like, I just saw Russell with Chrissy, and they're kind of looking at her at her locker, and he tells Chloe to go investigate Chrissy. So she says a quote here, it's not exactly a smoking gun. And I'm like, you know what? I know I've heard Chloe say that at least once before recently on this show. And I wish they wouldn't reuse these terminologies or catchphrases or sayings or platitudes or whatever you want to call them. I know that, you know, I was talking to Craig Byrne about this at the season premiere in Vortex, because she says, like, what are you, part bloodhound? You know, those are the kind of lines I remember, like, wow, these repeated lines. But he's like, look, these are different writers. They don't know. I'm like, okay, well... I mean, there's only 26 episodes by now, okay? It's not that hard to keep track. Yeah. It's not 10 seasons yet. But
yeah, exactly, yeah. There's not 10 times as many episodes.
Like script editors and script supervisors. But anyway, so she's on the case there. Lex comes to see Principal Reynolds. They talk here, and Lex wants to donate some computers to Smallville. And Reynolds says, oh, this is very similar to a conversation I had with your father. He wanted to donate a new wing to the library under two conditions, that you were allowed to stay at Excelsior and I was allowed to leave. So that kind of sets up, you know, Lex pretty much... becoming his father, you know, even with the best of intentions, right? He's doing the same things. And actually, I really liked what Reynolds had to say about Lex. Lex tells him, you know, I always respected you, and for in a lot of ways, you know, you're a big reason of who I am today. And Reynolds is like, oh, I'm not sure that's a responsibility I want to, you know, I want to have. So he has some good lines. Gosh, I think Reynolds probably has more scenes in this episode than Principal Kwan did all of season one. But he's got a character, he's got things to say. I mean, and you don't love to hate him, kind of like, and that's why I asked you earlier about the Principal Quark from Buffy. It sounds like a guy you kind of love to hate. You don't love to hate this guy. You actually kind of see where he's coming from. But that could work just as well if they had given it more of a chance. Now, I feel like they immediately just wrote it off, probably because it was in this, you know, this bad episode. But he's not the reason why it's bad. Just like Martha's dad is not the reason why this episode is bad. Like you said, they had a lot of good ideas. They just kind of fell flat. And it's like, you know, why don't you revisit these ideas later on, maybe with a different writer, a different approach, a different take. You can kind of salvage the stuff that you have going on here. So, but anyway, so this kind of, I guess this ties up the Lex and Reynolds plot. So at least we know what happened now between them.
Yeah, if you look at it in a certain way, you've got Lex unintentionally mirroring his father, which goes back to the whole what am I theme for season two. So if you've got Miller and Goff doing whatever they're trying to do in the writer's room, breaking this story, saying, okay, we need to fit this in season two. There's like a definite attempt of having Lex of like some kind of self-realization that he's slowly becoming his dad without realizing it. So there's a nice moment actually where Rosenbaum sort of has a strange look of fear. It's only momentarily. He has a strange look of fear on his face when he realizes he's just pretty much done what his father's done in the past. Perhaps with like different intentions, but the fact that Reynolds pretty much calls him out on it kind of scares him a bit, and it's a very blink and you'll miss it moment. Actually,
Yeah, and I think we can all relate to that. Like examples of things that like, you know, our parents or whatever did that we don't want to do, and we realize that just by just osmosis we've copied their behavior. You know, you're like, oh, I didn't realize that. So you need some kind of external source to call you out. So that's what's interesting about Lex, to see like this is how he knows how to react to people, right? He's basically trying to bribe the school to get Reynolds off Clark's case, but that's what he's observed from Lionel throughout the years, and that's what he knows, so that's what he's gonna do. But
there's a nice little line from Lex, which red flag again. Oh, we're upgrading the computers at the plant. Yeah, that's why he's in there.
That's a great call, Matt. Thank you for bringing that up again. And I'm going to bring this up until it's addressed.
Yeah,
they have not addressed the LexCorp, Luther Corp situation. Because we've heard about LexCorp, we've heard about the plant closing, I believe in Lineage, our next episode, I believe we finally see LexCorp, we see like Lex driving out of a driveway, it says LexCorp or something. That's the only time it's addressed since, and it's never really established what happened to the plant. Like, because Lex is running his own company, but then Lionel's living with him, and they're talking about Luther Corp, and it's like, who owns what, what's going, that's a great call about talking about the plant there, Matt, good job. We get another scene here between Lana and Clark, which is so short it doesn't even mean anything, because like I said, she's like, oh, Lex got me all this information, but I haven't opened it yet. And that's the gist of that entire scene, which we could have combined that with the earlier scene, saved us some time, gotten more time on these other plots that deserve more attention, frankly.
Yep.
So Clark decides to go see his grandfather at his motel, and he gives him like a family picture album, which I liked. This is a good move on Clark's part. From what he says is, look, I want you to see our family the way I see it. You know, we're not just, you know, dysfunction and debt, you know, which I thought was a good moment for Clark. Show some real, you know, agency from him. Like he didn't ask his parents about this. I mean, yeah, Lex and Lana, he kind of talked to about it, but this is completely his idea, and that's a really smart idea, and it's a good way of putting it. Like, look, we're people too, you know. We're just a family here. Look at our pictures and stuff. But you know, William's kind of cold to it actually, and he's like, he just kind of takes it. And then he hands Clark a check. He's like, here, give this to your mother. It's a cashier's check. Cash it whenever. And then Clark is frustrated with him. He's like, I don't understand how someone who hasn't seen their family in 20 years can just walk away. And he storms out. And this is in my notes here. These scenes are too short. Like, this scene should have been much longer. I don't know if the scene was longer and they cut it. But Clark references something they talked about when he saw his grandpa, which didn't happen in the scene. So we'll get to that at the end. But okay. I don't know. Like, I feel like more should have been done here. And by the way, did Clark just? This isn't like the digital age here. Clark had a photo album of physical photos he gave you know, to his grandpa. I guess they don't get that back, right?
No, because he leaves it with him, doesn't he?
Hopefully he had copies of those. But yeah. Anyway, Christopher Reynolds, Smallville High School, he's still on Chrissy about those transcripts. So, Chrissy, I left 3 messages at your house, and, you know, we're going to need those transfer papers. I'm like, really, man? This is what you're doing your first week at school?
Isn't there, like, assistant principals in charge of admissions or...
Yeah, this would not be... even if it was on his to-do list, it would not be on his priority list, right? But that's just to escalate the A plot with Chrissy, and she's like, okay, well, this guy's on to me. I need to take care of business here. So she's like, oh, why don't you come to the my parents will be at the pep rally later. You should come early and meet them. He's like, oh, great. So he's gonna meet. That's setting up him for later.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, Chloe's finding out that Chrissy has been around since 1921, going to high schools. So I mean, they go through these, you know. The pictures of the classic, like, oh, they're the same through all these pictures. They must be immortal. You know, that's the kind of thing they do. So she's been doing this since the 20s, right?
Yeah.
And if you calculate, like, how many people she had to kill in this episode to just, what, over the course of, like, less than a week, when she had to kill, like, was going to kill 3 people, I'm like, that's a pretty high body count. Seems like, you know, maybe as she gets older, she has to kill more. I don't know. You could justify it in some way, I'm sure. But that's a lot of people to kill for 80 years,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Because I don't know whether there's aiming to go for, like, that she kills so many people and then doesn't have to. So, oh, crap. Is it Toombs?
Oh, okay. I see. Yeah, Toombs from the X. Yeah. He has to kill, what, 5 people and eat their livers to survive or something like that?
Then he hibernates for, like, 30 years or something. So I'm just wondering whether it's kind of like that she has to have, like, a certain amount of, I don't know, youth from people.
See?
But then
I knew we could justify it if we tried, Matt.
Yeah. But, because either that or just that's a lot of body count.
There's no internal logic to this immortal witch, Matt. It's annoying me.
And here's the question again. What is she? If she predates the meteor shower, what is she?
There should have been a whole, like, mythology behind this character if you're going to make her not. I mean, as bad as it is, at least put some effort into it, right?
Yeah,
Say what you will about season 4, and I say what I will about season 4, believe me. At least they had, like, they wrote some entire ridiculous mythology around Isabel and the witches in possession and all that. It's stupid.
Exactly.
I don't like it, but at least they went to the effort to actually write the backstory.
Yeah.
So Reynolds shows up early, just like Chrissy told him to, obviously to kill him. And he shows up backstage, and she's kind of hidden in shadow, you know? And it's not quite the Joker reveal from Batman 89, is it? When she comes out of the shadows. So I guess that's creative. I don't know. What she looks like is Back to the Future, where they have pulled old age makeup, like on Lee Thompson, to be like old Mrs. McFly. You know?
Yes. I don't think anyone's managed to get aging makeup right, no matter what.
Well, especially teenagers to, like, middle-aged people. That especially
exactly,
doesn't work.
Yes. I recently was able to watch the pilot for Frequency.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's on my DVR. I haven't watched it yet. I really like the film, so I want to check out the show.
Yeah. I've never watched the film. I've not actually watched the film, but the pilot is actually a lot better than I expected it to be.
With Lucy Lane as the lead?
Yeah, Peyton List. Or Jane Sterling, as I know her from. More as she was Roger Sterling's wife in Mad Men. And but she's been in loads of stuff as well. She was it the Golden Girder?
Yeah, she's the Golden Glider on The Flash.
Yeah. But her mom is played by an actress who's only about 3 years older than Peyton List. And in the present day, the 2016, the poor actress has some of the worst old age makeup.
I mean, they're on a CW budget. Give them a break, but
But whereas somehow they managed to make Mekhi Phifer look exactly the same, well, except with a few wrinkles on his forehead. But it's something that I don't think the WB or CW managed to ever figure out how to do properly. It's actually one of those things that annoys me in general, actually, about in TVs, that very bad aging makeup, and I'm not sure why.
Well, you know, I think it's just, we've grown up watching so much of it, I'm just used to it now. It's just part of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, she knocks Reynolds out with, like, I don't know, like a trash can or something. I'm not sure what happens there. So is this, let me ask you this, is this a knockout to keep Clark secret for Reynolds here?
Yes, because he does his 20 feet trick.
Yeah, he throws a 20 feet. Okay, yeah. So we got a +1. So they knock out to keep Clark secret because Clark shows up looking for Chrissy and Reynolds and all that stuff. And see, this is another flag here. that this is season one. Pete doesn't know because Pete walks in right after Clark. He's like, "Hey, Clark, what's up? I was looking for you." And Clark's like, "Oh, Pete, go lock the doors." And Pete's like, "Oh, okay." And he runs off. It's just like he would do in season one, right? So Pete runs off so he doesn't see any stuff going on. Then Clark runs back, uses his X-ray vision. So, okay, there's some budget they used. Uses your X-ray vision, sees that Chrissy's about to just suck the life out of Reynolds, I guess. He runs back there and he says, "I'm not going to let you hurt anyone else. There's more to life than Spirit Week and cheerleading." And she says, "You're wrong," which I thought was hilarious. Unintentionally hilarious. Oh, man. Because basically she is, Chrissy is like, she's like the jock that lives in the glory days of high school, right? But has found a way to stay there at the price of killing people. But just like literally, there are people like this, you know, there are people that high school was the best days of their life. They were, and that's why I'm glad I wasn't like Mr. Popular in high school, you know, because the best days of my life are still ahead of me. They're not behind me. I was like seasons 1 through 3 Clark in high school. Okay. You know, he became super popular somehow in season 4, but, you know, just a guy who had some friends in high school, but it wasn't like, you know, the highlight of my entire life or anything. Although I talk about it all the time through the show, so maybe I should reassess that analysis of myself. Now that I think doing some self-analysis here. But anyway, people live for that. Like, oh yeah, we're going to prom and homecoming and the dance and, you know, all these things. I mean, yeah, it's high school is the culmination of your young life because you've been in grade school for, you know, 12 years or whatever. And then it's over. And then it's like, okay, real world now, you know, because in high school, I mean, you have a car, you have, you know, if you have parents who trust you, you can kind of have some agency to go do what you want with who you want. But at the same time, you have no true responsibility, you know, I mean, bottom line, end of the day, I mean, you're still a minor, you know, so it is one of the most freeing times of life, really, because even when you're after high school, if you're in college, you got a job, whatever, right? You got stuff going on. You got more responsibility. High school, you don't. And your biggest concern is, you know, the big game on Friday. So that's a worthy story to tell, but they completely botch it. And, you know, she's getting older here, Chrissy. And I don't know why. Like, her age is just getting worse and worse immediately. And then so she runs over to Clark to, I guess, try to suck his life. And then he, as you said, does his 20-foot thing, throws her 20 feet through like, the projector screen, which is actually, like, a pretty impressive special effect for a episode with no budget, right?
Yeah, you can tell, see the stunt lady just, like, fall. Again, it's like, okay, Clark, how are you going to explain that one? But,
yeah, exactly, right. Oh, she jumped through the screen.
Adrenaline.
You know? Yeah, adrenaline, I guess. I don't know. But then we have this, and they were pretty proud of it, reading the companion, of, like, the cool effect they did, of, like, the spinning, like, mirror cube. Because we see, like, stage by stage, we see Chrissy getting older and older, and by older I mean basically turning into a skeleton, and then she just falls back, collapses, and her CGI skeleton disintegrates with energy coming out of her eyes and all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, what the hell did I just watch? You
know, that was just exactly like what happens to most of the villains of the week in Buffy. They just like vanish in dust, and then they'll like have big yellow energy come out of their eyes, they scream, and
it's like, I guess were those the souls of all the people she trapped? I guess that was she kind of implied. I don't know. Like, and then Clark looks down at her. I mean, Clark's expression there is like, oh, well, that's too bad. Like, he doesn't seem that concerned or fazed by what he's seen, right?
Yeah. It's like, oh, okay.
Oh, well, okay. Well,
all right. Cheers.
On to Spirit Week. But that's another plus one for Smallville High School student death, because she was a Smallville High School student, even though she didn't have the proper enrollment papers. So yeah, that's another plus one. So we're at plus three total for this week. So yeah, now we're talking. Now we're cooking.
Here we go.
You know, we go back to the Kent farm, and Clark's talking to the Kents and, you know, about grandfather, and he references something that we never saw them talk about. He's like, yeah, when I went to go see him, he said that he tried to get back into our lives around the time that you adopted me, but, you know, that never went anywhere. And did we see them communicate that? No. Did he go back and get and talk to him? I don't know. But what I think is they might have cut it out of the scene because, you know, they had to fit 4 plots into this episode after all, Matt.
Yeah. They had to fit the envelope passing several different times with Lana.
Yeah, it's like, oh, Pandora's box. Should I open it? Should I not? Like, do we need 3 scenes of that? No, we don't. In fact, they could have cut both scenes and just had her show up at Clark's loft at the end with the envelope for the first time. Right, but yeah. See, in episodes that are bad, you can just, like, fix them in post, as we're discussing now. That's why we have more to say about these than, like, the, you know, the good episodes.
Yeah.
to me, it's always more interesting to talk about failures and figure out like how they could have been improved. But that's just how I
think. Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely, yeah.
But yeah, so ultimately it comes down here to the Kents not trusting William with Clark's secret. Because, I mean, Jonathan makes a good point. He's like, look, Clark, when you were younger, you couldn't control your abilities like, you know, you can now. And if we spend a lot of time together with William, then he might have learned your secret. And we've disagreed about so many things in the past. We just had to make a call. And it's like, whoa, that's actually pretty dark stuff. And because Clark's like, you're saying we don't have a relationship with him because of me? And it's like, yeah, that should have been the crux of everything, right?
Yeah. But the thing is that it's quite interesting, actually, because there's been quite a few times throughout the show, because of things that have happened, Clark always seems to jump to blame himself. It's because of me, isn't it? And then Jonathan and Martha are like, no, don't think that. You're an idiot thinking that, Clark. Don't ever think that. He goes, oh yeah, my adopted mom's dad doesn't talk to us because of me. Yeah, that's right. It's your fault, Clark. It's just quite, of all the times to kind of drop that bomb, I mean, it makes logistical sense, mm-hmm. but it's a bit...
The one time he doesn't immediately blame himself is the time he's to blame. Yeah, you're right. It's I feel like that should have been the crux of the episode. Because then you're like, okay, are they putting on this front just to kind of keep him distant, right? I mean, but I don't know. Like, I just so much bad will accumulated over the years. I don't know. I mean, this is a very interesting angle. Once again, a story that only Smallville could tell because they're at this stage of the character's life where you could tell this story. And they don't take advantage of it. And then, you know, we never address this ever again. So anyway, so we get so that's our scene there with them, and then we have our final wrap-up scene with Clark and Lana in the loft, because we're back to these loft scenes. And that's the other thing, the entire Clark, another flag, this is season one, right? The entire Clark Lana dynamic is not what it should be in this episode, because they've been through all these lies and secrets discussion, and they're kind of joking about, oh yeah, I want to find out the truth about things and honesty. And Lana's like, haha, Kents and honesty, and they're like laughing about it. But it's like, no, after what we went through 2 weeks ago with Red, you're not going to be that way. But this is the moment that we were talking about before. Lana asks Clark, so Clark, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And he's like, well, don't tell Chloe, but in college, probably studying journalism. It's like, no, you're not. So you're on movie sets, saving lives, living on your mom's farm. So, I mean, again, the show, and if you think back to the pilot, the show, you know, Smallville was conceived as a five-year show. You know, Smallville, at the end of the pilot, Jonathan says, well, how you doing, son? And Clark's like, ask me again in 5 years, right? That was supposed to be, that's their setup, like, this is a five-year show. Of course, this is season two, and it throws it off, but hey. At the time, they probably didn't, okay, well, we see a season seven? I don't know, but we don't have to worry about that then. We'll worry about that when we get there. And clearly, he's not in college, not studying journalism. So I thought that was funny. But Lana has her Pandora's box, and she finally opened it. So she finds out that her parents were legally separated for a year right before she was born. Where it's like, see, they had to do that, right? They couldn't make her mom have an affair, right? They had to be like, oh, well, they were separated. We were on a break! You know? So that's what they had to do, that, right?
But yeah, and I always see what you mean, like, oh, she didn't commit adultery, she was in a legal relationship, or ethically.
Yeah, but it was all on the level. It's like, okay, sure, whatever.
Yes.
But anyway, that's that, and so she thinks, well, this is the quote she uses. She's like, my father could still be alive. It's like, no, that's not how it works. Like, the way you say that and the way the show makes it feel like, oh, your father who you thought was dead is still alive. No, this is a different person. You know what I'm saying? This is a different person, right?
Yeah, so like, a different line, like, I think this guy's my actual father.
Exactly. This new character might be my father. That's how you say it. Like, don't be all playing up the dramatic show. Because, I don't know, nature, nurture, whatever. Smallville is about this very thing. You know, Clark's adopted. Lex is, you know, has his father as an influence over him. Clark has his Kryptonian father, you know, who's influencing him from the grave. There's a lot about that. But it's like, somebody who's, it's like, I understand she's an orphan, right? But she's like, you know, she's like 16-ish now. And, you know, she's lived without her parents since she was three. And, you know, would it really matter that, like, her biological father might be some guy her mom hooked up with, you know, 16 years ago while her parents are on a break? Would that really, why does that even matter? Why, you know, I don't know. Is that a bad perspective to have? I'm just saying. Like,
again, I can see where that was coming from. Going back to the what am I theme that I think they wanted to explore in season two. They wanted to perhaps find out where they were where they were from rather than who they were. Mm-hmm. And I think, whereas you've got the Lex Lionel stuff to go through, you'll have in Clark, and what Clark discovers about himself in season two. They probably needed something to help amplify that for Lana's character arc in the season. So they must have thought, okay, what's the best way we could do that? Well, we could probably have Lana discovering a bit more about who, about her birth. Well, not say her conception, about her birth, or
yeah, that perhaps,
yeah, but not the conception. But she probably won't want to learn about that. Perhaps just learning a bit more about where she came from as well.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's probably not as interesting to say, oh, she came from two characters who she can't interact with.
Right.
So the guy, so they thought, okay, what we can do for this season is to give her a character who's an actual father.
Yeah, because, you know, she is one of the big three, you know, Clark, Lex, yeah. Lana. So, hey, she has second billing. You know, I always thought Lex should have had second billing, but hey, it's WB, right? So the female lead has to be number two. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, they want to have these... all the main characters go through similar things and seeing how they all interact with them. So, you know, I follow that. That makes sense. But I guess I just meant just on like a, I guess I'm speaking from like a real world level, right? It's like, what, who, like some guy from my mom's past who may or may not be my father. Like, why would I don't know. But she's reaching out for any kind of connect. Well, look, she's obviously obsessed with her parents. I mean, she saved the Talon because of them. She wore that kryptonite necklace mm-hmm. because of them. So, you know, Lana, she's not the just normal girl next door that... the comics would have you believe. So yeah, this Lana could, I see her doing that now that we're hashing it out here. But
yeah, in that last scene, there is something that Clark says about his grandfather.
Oh, yes, thank you for, I'm glad we didn't forget that. Like the show, I'm glad. So please, Matt, continue.
Yes, where he goes, I'm going to see if I can find a way to have a relationship with my grandfather.
Nope.
So I can't remember it happening. I've got 5 episodes left. Perhaps I've missed that episode in season 10. But
stay tuned for the finale.
Yeah, perhaps, yes. But I can't remember him showing up in there as well. I might have fallen asleep during that scene when I first watched it. But yes, that's...
huge. That's a huge thing to have with your main character. Be like, I'm going to make this happen. And then not even a reference, not even a... I don't know. I mean, I have to think that because this episode was so illy regarded by not only, like, the audience, but the production itself, you know, I mean, they're all like, yeah, you know, we tried and stuff, you know. I mean, I think everybody's very aware this episode was kind of a failure. They probably just wanted to distance themselves from it. Now, although, you know, look back at Craving, generally considered one of the worst episodes of the show, but I feel like the saving grace of that episode is the Dr. Hamilton subplot with the meteor rocks, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And they
definitely,
didn't completely scrap. I mean, Lex set up a situation with him like, you know, all right, well, you're going to do research for me, and you had a good guest actor, Joe Morton, you know, so a recognizable face. They didn't just scrap that because it was a weird episode. So, you know, we have two plot lines here, Principal Reynolds and William Clark here, that could have gone somewhere, recognizable guest actors, story potential. But I don't know. So I don't know if that was a deciding factor or not, the fact that Redux was just generally considered one of the worst episodes of the show. But I have to think that might have been a factor. And they're like, yeah, you know what? Let's just not go back there. So, but you're right. The Clark does not find a way to have a relationship with his grandfather, unfortunately. But that's the end of the episode. And so we get Our Lady Peace somewhere out there, which I guess is referencing that Lana's dad is somewhere out there. Somewhere out there. Somewhere out there.
Working on something important?
Just finished my essay.
So where are you going to be in 5 years?
In college, probably studying journalism.
You're kidding.
Don't tell Chloe, but I think it's growing on me. I like to find the truth behind things. I'm tired of having secrets in my life.
And personally?
I've decided I'm going to find a way to have a relationship with my grandfather. How about you? Is everything okay?
Clark, I read Lex's file. According to court papers, my parents filed for divorce in 1985. Irreconcilable differences.
But they worked it out, right?
Eventually. But they were legally separated for over a year.
So the guy in the picture with your mother...
could be more than a friend. I was born right after my parents got back together. My father could still be alive.
Redux got a 7.6 on IMDb out of 10. And, you know, that's it's low, but I actually went to Graph TV, which is a website that kind of, it's interesting. It and I think I've mentioned this before on the podcast. If not, go check it out. It's an interesting way to kind of visually see how all the episodes of television shows work, right? Or rank, mm-hmm. as far as the IMDb ratings go. And yes, IMDb is not like the end-all be-all of ratings, but I think it's, if you want some kind of just gauge of what the public thinks, I think it's a solid way. Redux is not, it's one of the worst episodes of the show, according to IMDb, but it's not the worst. Craving is worse, according to IMDb. There are a couple more episodes, Thirst from season 5, Subterranean in season 6, but that's actually... Oh, then Nor in season 6, which is interesting. That was kind of a fun...
I wouldn't say that was quite low. I mean, I'm quite surprised that Spell isn't low in there, because that's...
Where is Spell? Let's see. Spell? Oh, wow. Spell has an 8.0, which is ridiculous. That is ridiculous.
No.
That is one of the worst episodes of the show.
No, no.
I take it back. IMDb's a terrible judge. I take it all back.
I say this episode's quite bad, but I'd still say that Spell is worse than this one, but I know it's got its defenders, and to be honest, I'm quite looking forward to seeing the other side of the argument in defending Spell. But yeah, I think this one is down there, but for different reasons to Spell. This one is more organizational than,
yeah, it's lots of issues, like the concept, the execution, the order of things, you know. So, you know, I know I quoted Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage earlier about his thoughts on this episode, and as he said, I'll use his quote again. This is probably one of the worst Marvel episodes that I've seen. But he gave it a 2 out of 5, which is his lowest rating yet. I mean, he'd given some other episodes 2s out of 5. He says, "I give it some credit for setting up plots that last longer than one episode, but for the freak of the week, unresolved plot issues, and no real explanation for a number of things, I give this episode my 3rd 2 out of 5 in the series run." So 2 out of 5 from Neil Bailey. So yeah, we've talked a lot about Redux here, Matt. What would you give it on our letter scale here on Always Hold On Smallville?
I don't think it's probably one of the lower episodes of the series. I don't think it's the worst. There's good ideas that are just executed and rearranged in a really badly done way. If there was a really awful episode, and there have been a couple, there's no redeeming factor whatsoever, or no potential redeeming factors. This still could have had potential redeeming factors in it, in terms of some of the characters that you could have had better episodes come from the ideas in the episode. That said, it is still a massive mess of an episode that just squanders all that potential. So I'm not going to go really low. I'm going to go for perhaps D.
A D is not really low.
I got into university on a C and 2 Ds.
All right, well, when you look at it that way. Yeah. Okay, so a D. Okay, so see, for all your praise, you know, you sprinkled in throughout the episode, I expected a higher grade from you.
I think, no, logistically, it's a mess. It is just a logistic mess of an episode.
But, oh, absolutely. It's the worst one I've seen so far.
Yeah, but what you do, if you could have taken some elements and made a better episode out of it, then you've still got some good ideas in it. But then if you've had certain episodes where there's absolutely nothing you could do about it, then that's an even worse episode, I think. So if that's just embarrassingly cringeworthy to watch, then that's a much worse.
Like Spell.
Yes. Yeah, like Spell. In isolation, there are bits in the episode you could take into better ones. So that's why it's not absolutely awful. It's just really badly put together.
Okay. No, it's solid. So it's funny. I thought I was going to be more negative than you on this one. Ultimately, for the reasons you say, I'm going to give this a D+.
Okay.
So it gets a plus for the potential that it had.
Yeah.
But that is the worst rating I've given an episode so far on the podcast. So this is between your D and my D+. This is definitely going to be the lowest rated episode for a while. It's the worst one yet, guys. And I know there are a lot of behind the scenes factors. We've talked about it here a lot. But yikes. It really, man, between this and last week's Nocturne, I mean, we are We're making up for that really strong start to the season, aren't we, Matt?
Yeah, it's kind of balancing itself out. But
it's got to give somewhere. 22 episodes, man. It's a lot. But 23 this year.
Yeah. But I think the season does kind of rebalance itself in the next few, I think.
So this is just a slight hiccup along the road here. But we have one more order of business, as we do, Matt. We have our series tally board. And we have some additions this week, let me tell you. So as I said, we have plus 3 for the Smallville student deaths. So that brings us up to 4 for the whole series. So when I was thinking about Smallville, that's why I added that category. I'm like, man, there's kids dying left and right, you know? There's really not, but this episode is really one of the higher death counts for at least students at Smallville High School.
I think it's probably going to, as soon as you get further into the show, particularly, I think season 4 probably has a few more.
Yeah, the show, it gets season 4, it's like lighter and darker at the same time.
Yeah.
So, I think we're going to see some more death there. So that's our new total is 4 for Smallville student deaths. And then we have a plus 1 for knockouts to keep Clark's secrets. Principal Reynolds got knocked out before Clark saved him from Chrissy. And that's going to bring us to 9. So we're at 9 of those. So concussions all around for everyone. And this episode, we're going to go ahead and give it a Bechdel pass for Lana talking to Nell about her parents. I think that's fair to do. All right, Matt. Well, we had a lot to say about Redux this week, which is a Redux in its own right. Because, I mean, the Redux, the reference of the title is Chrissy, you know, going through high school over and over again. And then also, you know, it's kind of a meta title because it's a Redux back to season 1. So Smallville is rarely meta, but I don't know if that was an influence on what they titled it. But anyway, the point is, we've said a lot. It's been fun. If people want to find you out there on the internet to hear more of what you have to say, because as you wrap up your Smallville rewatch, where can they find you, Matt?
Well, you can find me in 2 places, on Twitter anyway. My TV website, where I just mutter about TV, where I'm currently going through Smallville. Each month, I'm adding a different season. It's called The Bottle Episode, and you can find that on www.bottleepisode.co.uk. That site is on Twitter under The Bottle Ep. My personal Twitter account, which is private, but if you don't look like a crazy serial killer, then I'll probably allow you to follow me, is Zandmat, which is X and Matt, which is probably where a lot of my ongoing Twitter commentary is going on, which is coming to an end soon. I'd like to have a shout out to, I think it's Anthony A, who's Nick and Nugget Twitter, who followed me, I think, after my appearance on Zero, keeps commenting on some of the stuff I've mentioned. Thanks, Anthony.
Yeah, he's a big time fan of Smallville and the podcast, so he's always interacting with us on Twitter. Thanks, Anthony. It's fun.
But yeah, it's been a lot of fun. But so you can follow me on that. I think in the next couple of months, I'll be finishing off posting the episode by episode capsule reviews for Smallville. But as I'm reaching the end, I'm going to try a new style of article called The Final Curtain. So I'm going to actually not have a small review for the finale. I'm going to expand and have an actual article reviewing and analysing the finale when I get to it as well. So,
oh, okay.
At the moment, it's scheduled. It'll be scheduled to appear around the end of December, and then the finale one will appear in the next few days afterwards. So that'll probably be like 1st of January or something. But
so slightly before we get to the finale.
Yes.
So yeah, those are always fun, as you know, kind of go down the episodes and they're, you know, have a little bit of sarcasm to it, but you know, I enjoy reading your recaps of every season. It's very nostalgic for me to kind of see, to remind myself what I have to look forward to coming up in small.
It's quite funny when I'm doing my live tweeting, occasionally I have the Always Smallville account going, you'll have to remind me. Like, I know a couple of times I've had to remind you what episode I'm talking about.
Yeah, I was like, what? When did this happen?
But then I think there are some moments that are easy to spot as well. So
some moments you just stick with you forever. So, Matt, it's always fun having you on the show. So appreciate your time. Appreciate your great insight and conversation, man. It's a lot of fun.
No, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
And as for me personally, I'm on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreOnZach. As for the podcast, we're on Twitter at Always Smallville with 1S. We are on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville. And as always, you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com. Once again, with 1S. And next week, we're taking a break from Smallville. We're having our fourth Superman special, Superman special number 4, Superman on Supergirl. That's right. We're talking about the first two episodes of Supergirl's second season, The Last Children of Krypton, and The Adventures of Supergirl. And I'll be joined by our friend Craig Byrne from Krypton Site and K-Site TV. So we're just going to break it down what we thought about Superman being on Supergirl. So exciting times. And after that, in 2 weeks, we'll be back to our regularly scheduled Smallville episode, Lineage. But until then, always hold on to Smallville. I know you're out there, somewhere out there. Tell me.